It's 8:01, Monday, July 5th, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. Good morning, and welcome to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio. Good morning. This is John Duke. I'll be your host until 9 o'clock. My guest today is Marvin Duren from Marvin's Organic Gardens to talk about organic gardening, how to get your yard off of drugs, and the benefits to the gardener. We'll get to him in just a minute. WAIF, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during the Master Gardener Hour do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect my own views or the views of my guests. It's 8:03, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM, the real stepchild radio. What radio is meant to be. My theme music for the show was Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. If you have any comments or suggestions, we invite you to write us or call us at the station. Send your letters to WAIF FM, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206, or call us at 513-749-1444. Call in during the show if you have any questions for my guest. The studio line is 749-1444. I want to announce that the next WAIF Board of Trustees meeting has been moved to July 16th at 7 p.m. here at the studio. Marvin, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Thanks for joining me. Welcome to the show. Could you just maybe start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got into the hort business?
Yes, John. I studied agriculture back in the 70s and came home from the military and changed directions. I opened up 20 Waffle Houses here in the greater Cincinnati and northern Kentucky area. And I realized doing my landscape, the better my landscape looked, my curb appeal, the higher my volume went until we had the highest volume in the world.
Wow.
And I garden in Lebanon, Ohio. I have a nice vegetable garden and an organic landscape business and greenhouse and nursery operation.
Well, that's good. I've been out to your place on numerous occasions, and that's a real state-of-the-art greenhouse you've got there.
Thank you.
It's very impressive. I don't know of anything like it that I've seen around. And you do a lot of propagation. You've got a heated floor. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Yes, yes. That simplifies the propagation process. We're able to generate more plants in less space.
Well, that's good. Your garden center's out on Route 42.
Yes, 3 miles south of the Golden Lamb in Lebanon, up U.S. 42 above the city of Cincinnati.
Yeah, okay. And what are your hours of operation these days?
Monday through Saturday, 9 to 6.
Okay, okay. And you know, a lot of the garden stores and greenhouse-type outlets around Cincinnati specialize in... some do woody shrubs, some do perennials. You've got a pretty broad mix of just about everything, seems to me, out there.
Yes, John. Our goal is to have garden-worthy plant material for all uses, for the commercial grower or residential. Mm-hmm. We try to collect rare and unusual plants, but specialty has become our native material. We have trees, shrubs, perennials that are native that were here
Well, that's
before
good.
Civilization
yeah.
got here.
I think I know you're a heavily organic, very organic gardener, and I'm trying to be. I have some problems with it sometimes, but I'm not as rigorous about it as I think you probably are. But, you know, it strikes me that probably before World War II, which was fairly recent when you think about it, how long people have been gardening and farming, all gardening was organic. That's all there was.
That's exactly right.
And where did we go wrong?
We came home from World War II with the technology to manufacture cheap and economical synthetic fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
And from about 1950 on, we've been in the 90% chemical production. And organic is working with nature. It is safe. It's very cost-effective, and it generates good results, and I do it for safety, cost, results, and simplicity.
Well, that's a good combination.
I like to keep the simple system simple.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like composting. I think it's fun, just backyard composting. I know you've got a big composting operation.
Yes, sir.
How many acres?
I'm composting 26 acres right now. I have certified by Ohio EPA to compost yard waste and organic debris. I can also compost animal waste.
Oh.
And
roadkill?
No roadkill.
No.
I use the horse and cow chicken waste.
I see. Okay.
And their bedding, it all breaks down. And
how hot does it get?
We try to generate at least 130-140 degrees for 4 or 5 days.
Uh-huh.
And that kills the weed seed and any pathogens or diseases in the compost.
Okay. And then you sell that, of course.
Yes, we make it for our own landscape division, and also to sell for any retail customers.
Yeah. Well, getting yard waste and organic material from sources other than your own operation, I would think you'd have a problem with weed seeds.
If you heat the compost up for 3 days at 130 degrees, that can generally kill the weed seeds. It does.
And do you turn it regularly or?
Yes, I try to turn it twice a year.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't get turned as often as you would like, but commingling and mixing the ingredients together enhances and speeds up the decomposition. It helps break down that much faster.
Yeah. Well, I compost and I mulch with compost. I rarely use any fertilizers. I rarely use any fertilizers, commercial chemical fertilizers, and the compost seems to really help a lot. There was a study at Ohio State a few years ago that showed or compared mulching with compost and mulching with the shredded hardwood mulch that everybody uses, and their research showed you could get up to 5 times the bloom on flowering plants. And so, you know,
yeah,
that's a significant difference.
The results the results are important.
Yeah,
dark,
sure.
Green, lush, healthy.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
want flower power. And
right.
And
yeah. And, of course, I guess composting is kind of the centerpiece of organic gardening.
Yes, it is.
And you're familiar with J.I. Rodale?
Yes, sir.
Of and he was probably the godfather of composting. And organic gardening.
Yes, he
back
was.
In the 60s, and he was pretty much considered a crank. People made fun of him, and actually he died on the Dick Cavett show on television back in 1971. And but the environmental movement in the 70s gave him some credibility, and he's pretty popular now, and he's got books and everything, or his remaining organization,
I guess
does.
His family,
yeah. So he's quite an icon, I guess. Fertilizing is something that a lot of gardeners ask me about. How do you fertilize your daylilies or whatever? And I say I really don't. I haven't fertilized them in, I guess, about 2 or 3 years now anyway. But I use the compost, and I use it very selectively. Just around the plants that I want to grow.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Could you talk a little bit about what's the problem with the chemical fertilizers and what?
Well, John, first, the compost that we were discussing there is sort of the elixir that fixes it all. It's a balance of all your micro and macro nutrients. And if I'm concerned with the nutritional health of the soil, mm-hmm. I just improve my compost by adding more each year or each couple years. But outside of the compost, there is many bagged and liquid forms of safe organic fertilizer.
Okay.
We have our own private label fertilizer. It's a 833 analysis. It's low balance dosage, about half of the nitrogen, which is the first number there, is water soluble and available now.
Okay.
And that gives you a quick green up. And so.
Well, now, or is it a secret? What's in your fertilizer?
No, it's no secret. It's a composted poultry mix with sea kelp, and it has humates, which is the finished product of all composting. And, we have feather meal, which is a nitrogen source, and we also have dried blood in there as a nitrogen source.
That's pretty good. I like the 833 numbers because one of the things that master gardeners do as part of their classes is they bring in a soil sample and get it tested. And then they talk about, you know, how to interpret the soil test and all that kind of stuff. And almost without exception, the results come back from the master gardener students who've been, usually most of them, been gardening for a while, that they're way high in the P and K, almost to a point of toxicity in some cases, because
yes.
that doesn't disappear like the nitrogen.
That's exactly right.
And it's amazing how high some of that stuff can get if you just, you know, year after year, keep throwing the 10-10-10 on there. So this is good.
Yes.
I like that balance.
Yes. You know, your nitrogen, your first number on the bag, that water-soluble, we want low dosage because any excess would flow into our streams, creeks,
rivers,
and all. I've learned a fascinating fact that more than 22 million people get their daily drinking water out of the Ohio River.
Yeah.
So all of the listening audience here today, any of your excess nitrogen runoff would leach into the Ohio River.
Sure.
And high nitrogen is not good.
Right.
For human health or animals,
right,
and that exfoliates our streams and creeks,
and that's not something that they specifically take out, is it? Because it's soluble and
no,
it doesn't filter, and
that's
so
right.
It's just there.
Well, it's water soluble and goes right into our drinking water. It erodes down our streams and creeks.
I think if you water your garden with tap water, you wouldn't have to fertilize, huh?
Yes. Good pond water. We recirculate all of the water in our gardening operation.
Oh, okay.
And I go in several ponds, and then when it gets to the lower pond, I rush it to the top of the hill. But when I water, I'm watering with pond water, and it's almost like watering with manure tea.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Because it's got a little higher nitrogen and other...
Well, you probably, in a pond like that, you probably have some algae growing and things like that that help.
Yes, we do. I've been concerned that it was going to stop up my irrigation system, so we've just adopted 15 or more a white carp, to help us control that. They're... They're non-reproductive, and they don't populate my pond, but they have a set number, and they love algae. They
That's
eat
great.
Three times their body weight a day.
No kidding.
And then generate a good waste.
Well, now, I've just got a little pond. I mean, it's tiny compared to what you got, but I've got some just goldfish in there, and I don't ever feed them, and they eat that algae, and they're healthy, they're growing. And I haven't seen much reproduction, but they're basically carp too, I think. So it ought to work. Well, that's interesting. One of the questions I wanted to ask you about when we're talking about water, of course, they add chlorine to the city water for drinking purposes to control the bacteria. Now, if you water your compost pile, say, for backyard compost, or if it gets too dry, you water it. Is that chlorine going to inhibit the bacteria, do you think?
I'm not real sure.
Well, I'm not either. I'm doing a little test right now.
Okay.
Have you seen these little 2-liter pop bottle composters that the kids use like a school experiment to learn about composting? I teach kids composting once in a while, so I wanted to do that myself at home. And so I built one of those things, and it got a little dry. And I just added a little bit of tap water in to wet it down again, and it seemed to me like it just stopped it cold from shrinking, and temperature went down to ambient, you know. And so I got to thinking it must be the chlorine. So right now I'm in the process. I've got two pop bottles working. I used just regular tap water with chlorine in one, and water that I had settled and let the chlorine evaporate. And I got one of the swimming pool testers so that I know there's no chlorine in there, and I'm doing a side-by-side. And so far, it's not showing any difference, which is kind of surprising to me. I thought the chlorine would have inhibited the bacteria.
Yes. I have a lot of friends out in the country that save their rainwater
that's great.
In drums, or they pump out of a well to keep from having to use processed drinking water, tap water.
Yeah. I wouldn't think the chlorine probably hurts the plants that much, but it might hurt the bacteria in the soil or that kind of
the
stuff.
The live part of the soil.
Right. Yeah. Well, but you got to water. You water what best you can do, I guess.
You're exactly right. Without the water, the plants won't grow at all.
Right.
So.
Now, I've read where... the chemical fertilizers have some pretty bad consequences for soil structure, and even the plants. If you're growing vegetables, they don't have the vitamins in them that they do if they're organically grown and things like that.
Right.
Has that been your
John? The chemical fertilizers that most of us have used the last 30, 40 years, they're three simple nutrients: nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, or potash.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three numbers that we commonly see on a bag of fertilizer. That, to me, is a very limited diet. Three simple nutrients.
Right.
There's basically 18 major nutrients and maybe up to 100 micro and macronutrients that plants need in small trace amounts. I think giving them a simple 833 would be a very limited diet. In our composted material, that's not your only ingredients,
right?
But in a bag of synthetic chemical fertilizer, that's all you're getting is
right.
those three nutrients. So it's sort of starving the plant, or such a limited diet.
Right.
They need a host of other micro
like,
and
like
macro
trying to live on bread and water.
Exactly right. It's such a short, limited little diet there.
Yeah.
But it does make plants look healthy. The ears of corn will all be very consistent, or the plants all grow about the same size. So,
okay. Bruce Murray, our master gardener buddy, just arrived. He's a little late this morning, but
good morning, Bruce.
Welcome, Bruce. Come in, sit down, and get caught up. This is Marvin Duren.
Nice to meet you, Marvin.
Yes, sir. Nice to meet you, Bruce.
Sorry I'm late. I got out with my favorite Master Gardener project this morning. I'm part of the bridge team.
Oh, the Purple People Bridge, yeah.
And it was a bit messy this morning after all the fireworks. And
I bet it was.
Cleaning the cups and the bottles out of the pots and so forth.
Okay.
So I'll just have to apologize.
That's okay. No problem. I'm glad you showed up in time to read the public service announcements and the promos. So that's
great.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay. I think the plants, I know you grow a lot of your own plants there from seeds or whatever, but you buy plants, too, that you sell. Are those organically grown plants?
John, our goal is to try to buy and start from organic raised seed or plants.
Okay.
Some of the material that we do get in is not necessarily always grown
right.
organically. It might have had a dose of some kind of fertilizer on it or possibly a pesticide or fungicide.
Sure.
Once it comes into our operation, it will never see anything synthetic or chemical again.
Okay, it goes organic whether it wants to or not.
It goes organic immediately, and for the most part, we're growing nearly 2,000 species of trees, shrubs, perennials, herbs, annuals, bulbs, and everything is grown with our own private label fertilizer, that Marvin's Organic Gardens.
Well, that's great.
That 833. But it's a low balance dosage. It's sort of like the Amish have always said. They believed in a low balance dosage of fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And
for the home gardener who goes out and shops for plants, I think most of us probably hit a number of different garden centers and plant stores, most of which are not organic.
Correct.
And in fact, it's one of the things that when we plant shop is we like to look at the roots of a plant before we get it potted, you know, in a container.
That's a good idea.
But it's hard to do because, you know, they've got these little Osmocote balls on top. And if you turn it over and lift the pot off, you lose all the fertilizer. But now if somebody wants to go strictly organic at home, and you buy plants that have been fertilized by the garden store or the grower, is that a particular problem, or you just...
No, you just convert it the day it comes home with you.
Okay.
John, I take and I try to, if we buy some in that we visibly see a fertilizer on the surface of the soil like Osmocote,
uh-huh.
we will take and dump that out.
Okay.
And then we'll put them on our regiment. We foliar feed with some fish emulsion.
Yeah.
We have a wonderful little low balance dosage of fish emulsion.
Mm-hmm.
We'll then start them on our 833 fertilizer with sea kelp.
Okay. Well, now, you sell the compost, you sell your fertilizer, you have potting soil?
Yes, we do. We have a potting soil. We make available the potting soil that we use. It's a third cotton fiber, a third pine fines, and a third peanut shell, all of those aged.
Uh-huh.
And we also have bagged potting mixes that we make available,
mm-hmm.
and we try to have them available. We have had earthworm castings mixed right in,
okay.
right in our potting soil. And
that's good. I haven't tried your potting soil. I may have to
give it a try.
To try that one of these days.
We use it in every plant that we're growing, and it's generating real good root growth.
Mm-hmm.
I've
got some of it then, because I've got some of your plants.
Thank you.
I was looking for some cottonseed meal, and I was told out at your place that you don't sell that because cotton is one of the most sprayed crops there is.
Yes, it's heavily sprayed, and then about 20, 25 years ago, we used to get a lot of fat in the fiber, maybe up to 4%. Today, they chemically extract the fat out and down to like a 0.4% fat in the fiber. So it's not as good as it used to be. It was always known as high in nitrogen, but we're also using dried blood. Fish emulsions high in
nitrogen. Sure, the natural stuff. That's good. I had some specific questions that I wanted to get to about organically controlling diseases and insects and things like that. But I'd like to take a break here for just a few minutes. And before we get back to it, I think, let's see, it's 8:29. And you're listening to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio, with your host John Duke, and my guest Marvin Duran, and Master Gardener Bruce Murray on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour here every Monday this summer from 8 to 9. The weather's really been strange the last few days. The gray skies are kind of a gift to the gardener, but it's a good time to transplant. On a cloudy day, too, I understand. And then if it rains afterwards, you're even that much further ahead. I'm going to turn the mic over here to Bruce, and he's going to read a couple of public service announcements and a promo.
Great. Thank you, John. And talking of plant transplanting, it did turn out pretty well. I transplanted or filled some plants into one of the pots on the bridge. Occasionally, plants are pulled out of the pots, and... I did that last Thursday under cloudy skies, and they're doing pretty well. Of course, I did have to water them again this morning. They need a lot of water once they are transplanted. But the first spot we have is concerning the Girl Scouts. And girls who are interested in the fun and learning found in Girl Scouting are invited to join a Girl Scout troop in their community. For more information about the Girl Scout program or to register your daughter, call Great Rivers Girl Scout Council at... area code 513-489-1025 or 800-537-6241. And, of course, we're talking about organic gardening this morning, and one very important aspect of organic gardening is composting. And I think we all should reduce, reuse, and recycle. And composting is one way we can manage and recycle our organic landscape materials while manufacturing humus for improving our soils. It's time we stop classifying organic materials as waste and see them as Mother Nature intended. Let it rot. Contact the Hamilton County Department of Environmental Sciences at 513-946-7777 or the Civic Garden Center at 221-0981 for more information about composting. And as far as more on the station, if it's a Saturday and 6 a.m., tune into Gene's Bluegrass Breakdown with your host, Gene. He plays the best of bluegrass, some old, some new, and some gospel, too. Hear the latest from national and local bands. Dial in to find out the dates of upcoming festivals and tell your friends about us here at WAIF Cincinnati.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce. That gets everybody up to date.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Marvin. Well, while you still have the mic, Bruce, are you a organic gardener to some extent?
Yes, yes, I am. I will use fertilizers, but I don't use any herbicides or pesticides.
Okay.
That's about as close as I get. And, of course, as far as composting, I've got a very small lot.
Yeah.
And, however, there are quite a few trees around, mostly maple trees. And in the fall, I run my mower, it's a mulching mower, over the leaves several times. I make a pile. And basically, I have one section of the garden. It always looks pretty messy, but I put them there and turn them into the soil, and I let them rot over the winter.
Yeah, well, that's
and,
good.
That's
not all the plant material down on the Purple People Bridge, is that somebody's... how does that get fertilized and watered and everything?
Well, I'll have to say it's Osmocote primarily.
Okay.
And as far as getting watered, South Bank Partners, that's a nonprofit agency for the Newport and the Levee, they do the watering.
Okay.
They're supposed to water about three times a week. They're helped quite a bit by Mother Nature.
Yeah, sometimes.
And I will have to say...
Not lately.
And at this point, the pots are getting quite dry. That's why I did some watering of the things I planted last week on the bridge. There's a constant turnover... unfortunately, of plants on the bridge where people, I don't know whether they simply take them out and throw them in the river to see if they float or...
probably take them home to their garden.
Once in a while, we see plants disappear, and this morning there were two plants that someone apparently pulled on a little and they were pulled out, so...
Well, that's too bad. Public gardens are pretty hard to maintain, I think.
Yes, and I'll have to say this morning... comparing to past festivals such as Tall Stacks, the bridge was pretty clean. The people are filling the trash cans, and then, of course, once the trash cans are filled, then the pots are the next alternative. And at least they don't throw them into the river.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Well, Marvin, as I think you know, worms are among my favorite people in the garden. And there was a... a fellow down in Texas back in the 20s. He was a doctor and he was a gardener, and he had a beautiful garden. And his secret was that he just nourished the worms. He kept them fed and kept them moist and didn't use any chemicals, because he didn't have chemicals back then, I guess.
Yeah.
But people kept coming to him and saying, oh, come make my garden like yours. And so he would go over and tend to other people's gardens, and he never told them what his secret was. And he made beautiful gardens, and he even took care of some movie stars' gardens out in California. And he quit his medical practice and became a landscape guy. And then when the crash happened in 1929 and the people were having trouble getting fed in this country, he went to the agriculture department and told him his secret. And that's how we found out about him. It was kind of a neat worm story, I think.
Yes. There's a new book out right now by Miss Amy Stewart. It's a 2004 book. It's called The Earth Moved, and it is all about the earthworms. I've just got a copy recently here, and...
The earth moved. That's good. That's good.
And the good earthworm population can move up to 1.5, 1.8 tons of topsoil per acre per year. They're doing invaluable service. 1.8 tons per acre per year. They can move that much. They aerate.
Oh, in terms of aerating, yeah, but they make castings a lot more than that. They poop their body weight every day.
Oh,
and I haven't done it this year. I'm probably getting time to do it because they're getting pretty active. But in the past, I've gone in and counted worms in my garden. You dig up a square foot,
yes,
and just pick through very carefully, and pick the worms out, and put them in a little plastic bag. And I take them to the post office to get them weighed because they have good scales.
Oh.
And then you do the arithmetic.
Oh.
And if you've got 2 ounces, see if I can remember the numbers. If you've got 2 ounces of worms in a square foot, it's something like 175 tons of castings a year.
A year. That's good.
Per acre.
Yes. They're so important, the earthworms. They eat through the soil and help drain it.
Yeah.
And of course, their castings, their waste
right.
is
and
they high in nutrients.
They destroy a lot of pathogens too in the soil.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're great.
They help us feed the microorganisms, the live part of the biology of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Their castings is so rich. They mix it with enzymes and grind it up very carefully in their gut.
Mm-hmm.
They would help us drain the earth. The farmers today have tried or converting to no-till methods.
Yeah.
In order to help save the earthworm populations mm-hmm. on their farms.
Reduce erosion, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
They help the water during those peak rain periods absorb better and drain into our soils better. And
Worms are great. I've came across an article, I forget where it was, about these dead zones in the ocean now. Offshore, that's caused by the nitrates and stuff,
right?
And that's going to be hard to fix.
You know, a dead zone is an area that is depleted of oxygen,
right?
And by as decomposition occurs, ties up all the available
right
oxygen and leaves none for live
fish.
Creatures.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So everything alive depends on oxygen.
That oxygen.
So,
right.
There is basically 11 of those dead zones around the world. The major one in the world is the end of the Gulf of Mississippi, where the Ohio River Basin
sure.
runs.
Mm-hmm.
And we also in Ohio we have. Another one at the Maumee Bay up off the Maumee River dumping in from Toledo into the Lake Erie.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
So there's two good examples of
mm-hmm.
dead zones
yeah.
for us here
That's
in this part.
Bad news for the fishing industry, too.
Absolutely. Where there's no oxygen, there's
no fish. That's right.
No living creatures at all.
Well, now, there's plenty of living creatures in a lot of our gardens that are pests and insects and stuff. Generally, how do you manage that from an organic standpoint?
From a disease standpoint, we take the advice of Ohio State experts and add compost. You can't hardly beat it. It is disease suppressing,
uh-huh.
and it's one of its long-term stick-to-the-rib plant food.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good for disease suppression. In the soil, there's a lot of live creatures. They kind of cohabitat plants and animals,
sure.
little creatures and people and all. And in organic gardening, we're not trying to totally control that nature. We're trying to work with the live creatures in the soil to either prevent disease
mm-hmm.
or to control an outbreak of insects. By having a diversity at helps you control the rogue or the bad insects that are out there trying to eat your beans or eat your rose or whatever.
Right. Well, the insects are, at least in my garden, are probably more of a problem than disease, because I do use a lot of compost, and I have a pretty good diversity of ornamental plants anyway. And but I've got a blue spruce I found some bagworms on, and it's small enough where I just pick them off.
Yes.
But you can't use Safer Soap on.
No.
What does an organic gardener do? And if you got a big one,
you mentioned the number one is try to hand pick any of those. One cocoon, they say, can generate 200 to 700 little new offsprings.
Right.
a bagworm there is a night flying moth.
Okay.
Which easily sees and picks out that glauca color of the blue spruce and is attracted to that particular tree.
Yeah.
I see a lot of them dead up and down the highways covered with the bagworm.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
Yeah, it is, because it'll kill a tree.
Absolutely. Yeah. They hamper it.
Some insects are just an appearance problem and don't really hurt the tree,
right,
or the shrub or whatever, but it's like cicadas. I mean, cicadas are actually good for things.
You know, we've had pretty good success with BT, the product called BT, a natural bacteria we spray on as soon as they eat another bite. It paralyzes their intestines, and they suddenly
horrible death.
Bagworms, two or three days, and you know something, John, that I really advocate for insect control in a yard is attract more birds.
Oh, yeah. With
more wings equals less insect issues. In my own vegetable garden, I provide bird motel, and I feed all sunflower seed in the middle of the garden. As the bird comes in and borrows a free sunflower seed or two, they have their vision is so good. They'll see a little movement off to the side and fly down and help you by eating a green worm or a bug that could potentially be causing you a problem.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, we've got a fair number of birds, and we had a Dr. Gregory Dallum, an entomologist from NKU, on the program a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about mosquitoes and the West Nile virus and those little mosquito dunks that you have in your ponds to keep the mosquito. That's BT. But something that happened in our neighborhood after he was on this show is our neighbors found a number of dead birds. Which is a sign of the West Nile virus, and the health department came out and picked them up and checked them, and you know what they found? It was not West Nile virus. It was they were overeating cicadas and did them in.
Yes,
but they're gone now, so we don't have to worry about those. Yeah. Over at Boone County Arboretum, they've lost they're losing, I guess, a number of birch trees from the sawfly larva. Defoliates them, and that's a pretty serious pest, and they're using chemical sprays, which they don't like to do. And I've got a little birch, and I can't find any sawfly larva, but I've got some defoliation on that. I'm suspicious that might be what it is.
Well, the birch are usually typically yellow, their leaves yellow up earlier in the season than other trees, so it's a natural that they turn brown and dark a little bit early.
Well, this is default. I mean, they're eating the leaves all except for the veins, and they just, you know, eat the leaf in between the vein. That's what the sawfly larvae do. And I sprayed it with Safer Soap out of desperation. Now, are you okay with Safer Soap from an organic point
that's
of view?
That's approved.
Yeah, okay.
United States Department of Agriculture set into motion a few years ago the organic certification program, and We became certified 1 year ago this week.
Good.
And,
congratulations.
Very excited, yes. We have to follow the strict guidelines established by the United States Department of Agriculture, and it's all certified through an agency called the Ohio Agricultural Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association, OEFFA.
That's who certifies organic?
Yes. They are the certifying agent for the United States Department of Agriculture here in Ohio.
In Ohio.
There is other certifying agents,
in different states and stuff.
Yes.
I guess, too, certainly. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. So if anybody wants to become certified as an organic garden, that's who they would contact, I guess.
Yes.
Ohio, start with Ohio State, I guess.
Ohio Ecological Food and Farm Association, OEFFA, and they do have a web a web page. And you can go to USDA and pull up all the guidelines for the organic certification.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
They'll come and inspect your garden and yard once a year, and you can become organically certified.
Uh-huh.
And that would mean that all the plants that you generate there are organic and meet all the criteria established by USDA.
Okay. Is there any? Go ahead. I'm sorry, Bruce.
Is this something that's just for commercial growers, or is this something that?
Is there any benefit to the home gardener to get certified?
The benefit is if you can sell some roadside produce certified organically.
Okay.
That is,
so
that's
basically
really
it's for people who sell something.
Yes.
If,
yes. Okay. We're one of the only nurseries, that a full-line nursery that provides shrubs, trees, perennials, herbs, annuals, bulbs.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody that's a full-line nursery that's even close to.
No. You know, the common misconception on organic there is people will grow organically their fruits and vegetables, but everything else, the ornamentals in their yard, they will say, well, that doesn't matter. I'll just use something fake or synthetic or some kind of chemical off the shelf.
But it's the same worms.
But it's the same impact on the environment, and every little bit helps. So becoming organic and providing that organic means of gardening for all your plants is safer, ultimately, on all live creatures in the soil and in our water.
I'll have to confess to you that where I fail being organic is I use Roundup on my paths. I don't use it in the garden, but on my wood chip paths, where I'm obviously not growing anything except weeds, and I spray those weeds in the path with Roundup. And I don't care whether there are any worms, you know, in my path. As long as they stay out in the garden, I'm happy. Is that too awful?
John, I've got an article here before me. It's from University of Wisconsin in Madison. Uh-huh. Their entomologists say that one of the worst things we can do for earthworm populations is use the herbicide called Roundup.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have a need for any herbicides. We mulch and work with our weeds as best we can. But I was fortunate enough to serve our country in Vietnam.
Yes.
And I took my two oldest college kids a few years ago and toured North and South Vietnam.
Oh,
and I went back to the area where Agent Orange was used. And 30 years later, there's not one live tree in many areas.
Yeah.
And all we did, defoliated it two or three times.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing I know, the whole trees are dead. There's there's just remnants
of that's why they
trees
did it.
From years gone by.
Yeah, that's why they did it. And it's that long lasting, though.
It's that long lasting. Now, I'm not saying that Roundup has an impact that long. Understand.
No, it is biodegradable pretty quickly.
Yes, I understand that you can still test it in carrots and baby food 1 year after it's been applied. So it does have
they're coming up with these, what do they call it, Roundup
Roundup Ready.
Roundup Ready, that's
Roundup
the word.
Ready.
Yeah, so you
yes.
can go out and spray your crop
yes.
and kill the weeds, and it doesn't kill the crop, but it, yes. it's still there in the crop.
That's a genetically modified
right.
crop, which
right.
can withstand the Roundup.
But that's not going to last too much longer because the weeds are adapting.
Yeah. my
and
friend
Roundup's not going to work too many more years
friend,
on anything.
My friend raised soybeans. His soybeans reseeded the following year and suddenly became the weed.
Yeah.
And they're saying a lot of cross-pollination with close relatives
sure.
of whatever is genetically modified
yeah.
or suddenly becoming resistant to herbicides. So we use vinegar and lemon juice as just any of the vinegars in the kitchen work. And apply it at about 75 degrees in full sun.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the plant's dead in 20 minutes.
That's good to know, yeah.
And you can use it around cracks and crevices and on...
Now, what strength vinegar do you use?
I use full strength.
I
think some people maybe start with an application of about 50-50
okay.
water and try it at that rate
yeah, just
first.
Any kind of vinegar? Just
yep.
Plain old
one
vinegar.
Of the vinegars in the kitchen
yeah.
will work, it seems to work good. About you can go down and squirt across the front and come back, and if the
uh-huh.
plant's not browning by the time you get back in 20 minutes,
that's fast. Huh?
Maybe another little squirt.
It's amazing they can sell Roundup, isn't it?
it works pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to. Try that.
Yeah, give it a try.
I'll give it a try. You
yes.
may have a convert here.
Yes, yes. You know, weeds are a vicious problem in gardening. It causes,
oh, yeah.
they say, more
yeah.
people to quit gardening than any
yeah,
other
I
thing.
Know,
but pulling a weed works against you. You know, the experts at
uh-huh.
Rodale, which you mentioned
yeah.
earlier, say that pulling a weed up can upturn hundreds of weed seeds.
Sure. Sure.
So sometimes just pulling
right.
a weed, you're working counter.
Yeah.
They say
they
if
keep
you pull
coming.
Up a weed that's rooted deep,
uh-huh.
you might upturn a seed that hasn't been seen in these parts
right.
in a long time. So
right.
they live, seeds, weed seed live and are viable
for a long
for
time.
Many, many years.
Right.
And they say 200 to 600 pounds a weed seed can blow in per acre per
yeah,
year.
That
too,
I believe.
So.
Okay. Well, I need to do a couple of announcements here before we head out. We've got about 7-8 minutes left. I wanted to mention a couple of upcoming events. And the Civic Garden Center is hosting the 2004 Neighborhood Gardens Tour on Sunday, August the 1st. Meet at the Civic Garden Center at 2 p.m. For welcoming and refreshments. That's at 2715 Reading Road. Buses leave promptly at 2:30 and return at 5:30. And to make your reservation on the bus, you call the Civic Garden Center at 221-0981. And you have to do that by today. Today is the last day you can get a seat on the bus. The Civic Garden Center and Hamilton County Environmental Services is teaming up to offer a three-part series to teach every aspect of backyard composting. The course is free. The dates are Wednesday, July 7th, 14th, and 21st. From 3 to 6 p.m. at the Civic Garden Center, 2715 Reading Road. You can call them to sign up at 221-0981. Another event that you don't want to miss this week, daylilies are pretty much peak bloomed right now all over the city, and the Valley of the Daylilies is open, having an open house from July 5th through the 11th. They have great selections, and Dan Bachman is very generous with his daylilies when you buy them out there. And he's at 1850 State Route 123 in Lebanon, Ohio. You go out I-71 north and get off at exit 32, and you take Route 123 east for about 2 miles, and he's right there. And let's see, the Greenfield Plant Farm is also having a sale through the 10th of this month. They're in Mainville off of Route 48 on Stevens Road. And their hours are Monday and Wednesday, 9:30 to 5, Thursday and Friday, 9:30 to 8 for working people to come after work, and Sunday from 11 to 5. And they have a lot of classes, too, that they're offering this next weekend. So give them a call at 683-5249 and find out about their classes. Next week, my guest will be Dan Bachman from the Valley of the Daylilies to talk all about the fun of growing daylilies. So tune in next week, and we're going to talk about daylilies. Did you know that WAVE depends on you, our listeners, for financial support? We're an all-volunteer, nonprofit community radio station. For only $15, you can become a member of WAVE FM. You can join on the webpage at www.waif883.org. And all programs are supposed to be archived for 96 hours, but the streaming company is not doing their job this week, so I don't think it's working for this particular program today. I hope they get it fixed soon. Let's see. If you want to listen to some of the previous shows, there is a website. It's the American Compost Society website at www.writethisforme.com/ACS, and there's a Master Gardener Hour link that you can listen to some of our past programs on that. I want to thank you, Marvin, for joining us today, and Bruce, too. Do you have any last words of wisdom?
Hey, John, we should offer our customers an opportunity to come out and visit Marvin's Organic Gardens.
Absolutely.
And find out more about organic
Absolutely.
Gardening. I have an excellent staff. We have a doctor of entomology on staff, and we have some fine horticulturists. We also are having a big sale right now, 50% off from all bedding plants, and we have 25% off all trees and shrubs.
We might get out there again this week. I don't know where we put it, but
please do. Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Well, I do have one question. Where is Marvin Gardens? I don't know whether you said this before I arrived.
It wouldn't hurt to say it again.
Yes. Marvin's Gardens is on U.S. 42, 3 miles south of the Golden Lamb in Lebanon, Ohio. It's just 25 miles north of Cincinnati. I-71 north, and it's just around the corner from Kings Island. You get off at Kings Mill exit and go over to 42, go north to 42, turn right, and we're 4 miles up there on the left. It's not very far from anywhere in Cincinnati, and it's convenient.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and I guess it's time to come out with our... This has been the Master Gardener Hour with John Duke. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour every Monday morning this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. All we ask is 1 hour a week. We welcome your comments and suggestions, so please send a note to WAIF, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206. I'll be on next Monday with Dan Bachman talking about daylilies. And stay tuned for One Voice. Take care of yourself. Your garden needs you. And thanks for listening.